From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The EU is accused of double standards over Austria's far right in its approach to talks with the ACP. Caribbean travel agents single out British Airways and American Airlines in their ticket war. And fares in Jamaica, that greater official recognition of Bob Marley could mean a softer line against marijuana. I'm Orin Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. CARICOM's chief negotiator, Sir Shweta Thramphull, is admitting that EU-ACP talks on an agreement to replace Lomé nearly broke down at the last minute over the issue of immigration. And he contrasted what he believes is an uncompromising European approach in Brussels with their refusal to stomach the utterances of the leader of Austria's far-right governing party, Jörg Haider. Besides his pro-Nazi sympathies, Mr. Haider's support is based on a strong line against immigrants and foreigners. More from Sir Shridath in a moment, but first, the BBC's Liz Trussell has the background on the man the EU has turned into a pariah.
In the past, he's praised Adolf Hitler's employment policies and has said that the veterans of the notorious Nazi SS, the elite army units, should be honoured. Although Mr. Haider is not included in the cabinet, he'll remain a controlling force, prompting fears that the new coalition could spark a right-wing resurgence throughout Europe. European Union states say they'll isolate Austria and have agreed to limit contact with the new administration. Belgium in particular has taken a hard line against Austria. Former Belgian Prime Minister Leo Tindemans.
I think that the big majority of the Belgians are against extreme right in general and are afraid that the situation in Austria could evolve into a pre-war situation.
However, reaction inside Europe has varied. While France and Germany have been strident in their opposition to the new government, Britain and the Netherlands have taken a more moderate line, preferring to wait and see what happens.
Liz Trussell reporting. Sir Shridath told us after the talks in Brussels that he was generally satisfied with the trade and aid parts of the New Deal, but he was surprised that immigration figured as much as it did.
If you'd spoken to me a year ago and asked me of the critical points in the negotiation, I never would have identified migration. But the Europeans, towards the end of the negotiations, came forward with notions of obligations being assumed by ACP countries for what they describe as the readmission of ACP nationals and indeed of third country persons who may have come to Europe from ACP countries. They were thinking essentially, of course, of persons coming to Europe from Africa. The ACP demonstrated tremendous solidarity in absolutely refusing to countenance the excesses of this, which probably have their origins in European terms in what is going on in Europe, including, of course, what is going on this week in Austria. But the way to solve the problems of xenophobia that are evidencing themselves in Europe is not to adopt them in relations with the ACP.
Let me quote the EU Development Commissioner on the same subject of immigration. We have made a genuine breakthrough in returning illegals to their countries of origin. And, of course, he's speaking from a European point of view. It was an enormous step forward. Was it for the ACP?
An enormous step forward? The ACP has agreed that it is willing to discuss the matter. The ACP agrees that illegal immigration, both in Europe and within ACP countries, and there are ACP countries who have migrant problems, is a problem. We have agreed with Europe that this is a matter that has to be dealt with bilaterally between Europe and individual ACP countries.
You made reference.
If that represents a breakthrough from Mr. Nielsen's point of view, I will not argue with it.
You made a reference to Austria. Do you mean that on immigration issues, Europe is becoming more inward-looking and that
well,
is where they were trying to push?
Of course, they are. I mean, what is manifest in the Freedom Party and Haider in Austria is something that worries Europe tremendously. It is not the case that the rest of Europe is like Austria, but it doesn't want to become like Austria. And it may have a notion that by demonstrating militancy with the ACP in the area of migration, it is reassuring its publics that it too can be militant.
They might take offense at comparisons with Haider.
They would be right to take offense if anyone suggested any member country of the European Union is a counterpart of Austria. Nobody is suggesting that. But the way you react to the problems generated by the excesses in Austria is not to transfer them, as it were, into negotiations with the ACP.
Sir Shridath Ramphal, Caribbean ministers responsible for trade and development began a two-day meeting in Georgetown today. They're hoping to resolve a major trade disagreement, as Colin Smith reports.
The previous time the Caribbean ministers came together to discuss trade issues was last November in Seattle. Ghana's Minister of Trade, Mr. Geoffrey De Silva, told BBC Caribbean Report that he hoped that in this meeting, Guyana and Trinidad would move closer towards settling the issue of the reluctance of major Trinidadian companies to import parboiled rice from Guyana. Trinidadians have cited inconsistent coloring, and it has even been suggested that the CARICOM agreement on standards and quality should be altered to include color. This could make it easier for some countries to reject Guyana's parboiled rice. However, Minister De Silva told BBC Caribbean Report that Guyana was strongly against such a move.
The question of color has more to do with marketing, and that matter will continue to attract the attention of our officials, our bureau officials, Bureau of Standards Bureau's officials, and the Trinidadian officials, but it has nothing to do with the standard.
Some Trinidadian technicians are in Guyana to advise Guyanese rice producers on rice coloring. The CARICOM technicians who met over the weekend to prepare for today's ministerial meeting also agreed to propose the setting up of a mechanism for monitoring the rice trade in the Caribbean. Guyanese and Trinidadian officials are both confident that the two countries are on the right track to resolving this issue. Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana for BBC Caribbean Report.
Ahead of talks later this week, developing countries are hoping that some of their trade concerns will be addressed at a forum in Bangkok. It's being organized by UNCTAD, the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. Ken Richards reports that UNCTAD officials want to avoid the mistakes which led to problems at the WTO summit in Seattle.
It's not likely that the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development meeting in Bangkok will jumpstart world trade talks that crumbled last December in Seattle. UNCTAD seeks to promote development of poor countries through trade. Developing nations who want access for their products to Western markets are hoping that such issues will be on the table at the February 12 to 19 meeting. And UNCTAD's Director General, Rubens Recupero, doesn't want the Bangkok Forum to turn into another Seattle debacle.
Until now, all those concerns and fears have been left to themselves, and people only have one outlet, which is to manifest, to protest. And we are trying to invite them inside the room to structure the debate.
However, the European Commission's delegation to Thailand, Michel Calouet, says the Bangkok meeting won't address key areas of dispute between rich and poor countries. UNCTAD officials have said, though, that they hope the overwhelming presence of trade officials will provide an opportunity for some of the thornier issues to be ironed out. They believe UNCTAD can help the World Trade Organization process by setting guidelines on how both rich and poor countries can benefit from free trade. WTO officials were meanwhile struggling today to put failed trade talks back on the agenda. At their meeting in Geneva, they indicated that they expect negotiations on lowering barriers to trade in farm produce and services to begin within the coming weeks.
Ken Richards reporting. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The Caribbean Association of Travel Agents has been defending its decision to single out American Airlines and British Airways in its refusal to handle ticket bookings for airlines that have cut their commissions. The U.S. carrier Continental was the latest to announce a reduction from 9 to 6%. AA and BA were the first, and Air Jamaica and United Airlines have followed. The president of the Regional Travel Agents Association, Wayne Rodriguez, describes it as a domino effect.
Those carriers such as Air Jamaica, United Airlines, and Continental does not affect the entire Caribbean, although Air Jamaica does affect just the Jamaican travel agents at the moment, and we have some concerns and reservations on that.
They've all reduced their commissions to travel agents. As a point of principle, shouldn't you be retaliating against all of them?
Yes, basically we are retaliating in that we are removing the market share that they now enjoy over to the carriers that are offering us the 9%. We are taking special interest in both American Airlines and British Airways, who were the first two to go that route. As one would realize, the 9% is built in to the tariff fare that they apply to the civil aviation body for. And as such, that, I mean, will affect agencies throughout the Caribbean in a devastating way, in that we do not have the buffer services that probably Europe or the United States has.
But they've all cut their commission. You could be accused here of A, being discriminatory, and B, of splitting hairs. They've all cut their commission. If you're going to be consistent, treat them all in the same way.
Well, basically, they will all be treated the same way. Obviously, we're going to move our market share over to the carriers that are offering us 9%. We feel American Airlines are actually causing or forcing the other carriers to move in that same direction. And we have already indicated that American Airlines and British Airways will be targeted. I mean, you have an airline like Virgin Atlantic offering us from the 1st of March 10%. They're still giving us the 9. You have BWIA, our national carrier, together with Air Caribbean, offering us the 9. Air Canada is offering us 10% commission. And these airlines have not move from their position. You have Sunam Airways, you have ALM, you have LAV, Aeropostal, you have LIAT. You have a number of carriers operating in the Caribbean who have maintained their position because they have seen the light that the agent provides 80% of the revenue that they receive.
But is this a fight you can win, Mr. Rodriguez? The trend seems to be that they're all moving towards a 6% floor or ceiling, if you like.
What would you have me do? Sit idly by where American Airlines and British Airways and a couple other airlines have said, listen, we can no longer pay you 9, take 6. What is going to happen a year from now or 2 years from now where they will come and probably offer me just a flat fee for issuing a ticket and I know I cannot survive?
You're making a stand.
So I am making a stand.
Wayne Rodriguez. Jamaican MPs have tabled a private motion calling for greater national recognition of the late Bob Marley. Despite the reggae superstar's undoubted high place in Jamaican and global cultural consciousness, some are concerned it would glorify dope smoking. Karen Weir has the story.
Many Jamaicans and lovers of reggae music across the world yesterday celebrated what would have been the 55th birthday of the late Robert Nestor Marley. His status as Jamaica's greatest international cultural icon is unquestionable. Bob Marley's Exodus album was voted Album of the Millennium by Time magazine, whilst the BBC named his song from the Exodus album, One Love, Song of the Millennium. So with all of this international accolade, is there really need for greater national recognition of Bob Marley in Jamaica? Most definitely, says Government Minister Ronald Thwaites, who tabled the first private motion in Parliament.
There's a scripture saying that prophets are seldom without honor except in their own land. There is a strong feeling among the people I represent that while the international world has recognized the genius of Marley, that we locally have done so to a point, but not as fulsomely as might be expected.
But a key tenet of the Rastafarian faith, which Bob Marley promoted, is the smoking of marijuana. The question on most Jamaicans' minds is will greater national recognition of the music legend lead to the decriminalization of the Class B drug known locally as ganja?
I want to make it quite clear that there is no settled policy on this, but it certainly is being discussed in government circles. There is a national commission to study the issue which is being formed, and there is certainly a major distinction being made between the private recreational religious use of ganja and the trafficking of the weed.
Opposition JLP Minister Mike Henry, who co-wrote a best-selling book on Bob Marley called Marley and Me, says the people of Jamaica must have a say in the decision-making process.
You have to deal with his religious beliefs. You have to be able to deal with the fact that he himself smoked marijuana openly and did so at the peace concert. At any given point that the authority would so rest with me, I would seek to ensure that that matter be addressed, if it's even in a referendum of the country.
The motion will be debated in Jamaica's parliament tomorrow. From Kingston, Jamaica, this is Karen Weir, the BBC Caribbean Report.
And that's how we end this program. I'm Orin Gordon saying goodbye from London.